It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And Cecil Harvell is with us from Harvell & Collins. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
Doing all right. What are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, last week we talked about the rights of the spouse, the surviving spouse, in the estate of their deceased partner, mm-hmm. spouse. And, of course, this law is known as the elective share statute in North Carolina, and it applies, of course, whether or not the husband is the first to die or the wife is the first to die. Their surviving spouse, whoever that might be, has, under North Carolina law, the right to elect their share.
Right.
And so this is very interesting, isn't it, Ben? Because if you have a client come in, and we many times do, either the husband or the wife, and they say, listen, Mr. Harvell, we are happily married, but we have assets from prior marriages or from prior circumstances in our life, and we want our assets to pass directly to our children.
Right.
We do not want them to pass necessarily to each other. Now, clearly, I made a little jump there in the facts. I mean, obviously, this is a second marriage.
Yes.
You know, or even a third marriage where folks have children from a prior marriage. But then we see a lot of these circumstances, as one would expect, if we are talking about, you know, the folks that have been married for 55 years. We also see a lot of those, by the way. Mm-hmm. With their collective two or three children, then this is not as much of an issue in those files, because many times it is true that they would want to leave all of their assets to their long-term spouse, mm-hmm. knowing, of course, that that spouse is going, they have collective children, they have children that they had together, and the spouse is going to then leave the assets to the respective children. But all of those dynamics change.
Mm-hmm.
When we are in a second or third marriage, and we have children from a prior marriage.
Even with a will.
Even with a will. Even with a will. So the husband will say, I do not need to leave my estate to my spouse. She has her own assets, and we have agreed. We've discussed this. We decided this before we got married. And so I would like my will to be written in a way where my assets simply go to my children. That can be done, but that client has got to be fully advised that the wife then, and or her representative, which I want to talk to in a moment, can then elect their North Carolina share in his estate, notwithstanding mm-hmm. the terms of the will.
Mm-hmm. Now the surviving spouse, could they refuse that elective share or decline it or waive it?
They can at the time of the death of their spouse mm-hmm. not elect. It is an election.
Okay, so it's,
They are not forced to make the election.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, Ben, and we've had a lot of files like this, at this point, the wife, if you will, the surviving spouse, is elderly,
mm-hmm.
and her children are operating under her durable power of attorney.
Right.
And of course, the question then is on the table, that doesn't the attorney, in fact, have a duty to elect
yes.
this share?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the argument can be made that they do. That would be their fiduciary obligation.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly has been the position that our office has seen in a number of files, where even though the parties agreed,
right,
when they were of sound mind, when they were younger in their mm-hmm. 60s or 70s, early 80s, they agreed that they wanted their assets to go to their respective children.
Mm-hmm.
But now, of course, the husband dies, the wife is the survivor, she's late in her 90s or something of that nature, she is not really able to make decisions, her son is now making decisions for her, and of course then elects this elective share under North Carolina law,
mm-hmm.
pursuant to her durable power of attorney.
So, again, the elective share often then comes into play, as we said, second or third marriages, and maybe when someone other than the actual person is choosing that elective share as their representative. So, so there are, planning techniques you've talked about.
Well, Ben, you have in front of you those percentages, and let's go through them a moment for our listeners. Now, we talked together that if it's under 5 years of marriage.
If it's under 5 years, it's 15%. If it's five but less than 10, it's 25% of total net assets too. You'll have to explain that part.
So five to 10 years is now 25%. 5 years goes mighty quickly. So let's say a marriage of 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about 25% at that point.
Right. And then 10 years but less than 15 is 33%, and 15 years or more is 50% is the elective share.
Right. So,
and of total net assets.
It is. And what the total net assets is basically defined in case law as well as in the statute is really the totality, if you will, of the estate other than assets that did in fact pass to the spouse, which is why it says net.
Mm-hmm.
But we are talking about such things as IRAs, retirement accounts, annuities, joint accounts with right of survivorship, property that is titled with the spouse and their respective children with right of survivorship. These kinds of titling of assets, Ben, even though they pass by operation of law or by contract to the surviving children, they are subject to this elective share. So what do I mean by that? I mean that the estate can be clawed back, joint with right of survivorship accounts can be undone, annuity beneficiaries can be undone, IRA, retirement accounts, the list is endless. All of these things are looked at in order to determine the net asset value of the estate of the decedent so as to then be able to apply these percentages that you and I just discussed.
Yeah, and it's a pretty long list. I'm just looking in the statute now of all the that's included in total assets. So this is all the more reason why you want to have good planning going in.
The most straightforward technique that we would use to assist clients in accomplishing their objectives, which again would be to leave their assets to their children from a prior marriage, would be to place this percentage, Ben, that you and I have spoken of, to place that percentage into what is known as an elective share trust. And to have a non-interested trustee, which that means that it cannot be the spouse, it cannot be the spouse's children, but someone of a non-interested background come in and manage that percentage for the lifetime of the surviving spouse. They get the income off of that percentage for their lifetime, and they can also obtain principal out of that percentage for care, support, maintenance, things that we usually, as reasonable people, would spend our principal for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we usually don't spend our principal just to maintain our home, our cars, our insurance, things of that nature. These are usually out of our income, out of our routine monthly income. But principal distributions are unforeseen medical costs, unforeseen kinds of events that might occur where we would unfortunately have to go into our principal as a reasonable person. The trustee is as well allowed to do that. And then upon the death of the surviving spouse, this percentage, this elective share trust, then does in fact pass back to the children from the prior marriage.
Okay. These are all parts of what can be a complicated system for a lot of people to understand, and one that many people have no idea even exists. So we'll talk a little bit more about the elective share and elective share trust and planning coming up in a moment here on Coastal Daybreak and Let's Talk Legal. You're invited to call in with your questions if you'd like to reach us and ask Cecil a question.
Call me at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And we'll have more to come in just a moment. Welcome back. Talking about the elective share and North Carolina statutes on that and the percentage that can be claimed by a surviving spouse regardless of the will, right?
Correct. And then there are other rights of the surviving spouse in the estate of their deceased spouse. There are other significant rights that exist in the state of North Carolina. Without a will, there is the right for the surviving spouse, whether they've been married a year, 6 months, 20 years, 50 years, there is the right in the surviving spouse to be the first considered person to be the administrator of the estate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rare for the clerk of court not to appoint the surviving spouse under those circumstances. In other words, many folks do die without a will, and they have not appointed an executor. And so the surviving spouse is going to be under the statute, is the first preference,
mm-hmm.
if you will, to qualify as the administrator / executor of the estate. Another right of the surviving spouse is the right to what is known as the year's allowance or year's support. And this is $30,000 under current North Carolina law. And this amount of money is going to pass to the surviving spouse to the exclusion of creditors, to the exclusion of any children from a prior marriage, to the exclusion really of I don't know of any exception to that rule. This is a hard and fast rule that applies $30,000 of the year's support to the surviving spouse. She or he can elect to take this in personal property value, such as,
right.
say, the car, the automobile,
mm-hmm.
Or any other kind of asset. And it does need to be, discerned at some point and documented in the estate file exactly what comprised the $30,000 year's support.
Right. Now, and that is not included, or that would be part of the net of the total net assets. I mean, it would mm-hmm. be taken off the top of those assets, total assets.
Yes, that would be
because the elective share could still come.
The elective share would come in addition to that.
Mm,
that
right.
is correct. But anything that passes to the surviving spouse, like say the home was in fact titled jointly with the husband, tenants by entirety. Now, of course, that would be subtracted
mm-hmm.
from this percentage bin,
mm-hmm.
as would the $30,000 year's allowance, as would any other asset that passed to the surviving spouse would come away from the percentage.
Mm-hmm.
I think before we went to the break, you made the magic comment, Ben, which is that what really is happening here, and of course it's radio silence out there, haha,
right.
this morning, no questions, it's a quiet morning, but Ben, most folks just aren't aware of this.
Right. right.
That's what you were alluding to before yeah. we went to the break.
Yeah, and they think that they're, that
whatever their
they
will
say,
says.
And they've done one on the internet, and
correct.
They think that's going to be it.
Correct. Yeah. We do have this occasionally apply in a in the traditional 50-year marriage.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, let's say that the wife, I have a file like this right now in the office, that she has inherited a very considerable sum
mm-hmm.
through not only her parents but an aunt
right.
that never was married with no children, and she is the sole beneficiary of both estates. Well, she now has a significant amount of assets. She's been married for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And even her husband
mm-hmm.
does not want these assets that she's inherited to necessarily go to him.
Right.
He too wants them to pass on to the children. But again, this elective share statute is going to toy with that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to need to plan around that a bit because, again, he has the right to come in and elect his share of her inherited property. Now, our listeners are saying, oh, my goodness, Cecil, I thought that inheritance was separate and
right.
distinct property.
Mm-hmm.
That's and they're correct depending on who's asking the question.
Yeah.
Is it the divorce lawyer asking the question? Then, of course, marital assets or marital separate assets, including inheritance, are inheritance if they've been kept separate.
Right.
Okay? But this is not being asked by a divorce lawyer. It's being asked by the executor of an estate.
Mm-hmm.
It's being asked in the context of an estate. And in the context of an estate, if these are assets of the wife that she inherited, they would be included in this determination of net asset value.
Now, you've mentioned before about prenuptial agreements.
Yes.
Can affect this. What about postnuptial?
Prenuptial agreements should be looked at very, very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
And I highly recommend them for folks who are entering into marriages for a second or third time. Not so much, of course, I'm prejudiced always towards estate law, I guess, Ben,
mm-hmm.
but not because so much of the divorce circumstances.
Right.
But because of this estate entanglement,
yeah.
the right to qualify
mm-hmm.
as administrator, the right to years support, the right to the elective share, the right to intestacy share if the estate were to pass without a will, all of those kinds of things are waived in a well-drafted prenuptial agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And I highly recommend them. The thing that is also not understood about a prenuptial is just because we have a prenuptial doesn't mean that we can't then a year later, even 6 months later, one day later, draft a will that leaves our estate to our surviving spouse.
Right.
It's just that we, the holder of a mm-hmm. prenuptial agreement, have the control. We have the deciding trump card, okay, not the state of North Carolina. So we, of course, can leave any part of our estate to our spouse. A prenuptial doesn't say that we can't do that. It just says that these laws
mm-hmm.
that are applicable just because of the certificate of marriage do not apply
mm-hmm.
as between these parties because they agreed before they got married that they would not apply.
Now, what about after a
yeah.
marriage, a postnuptial
agreement? A postnuptial agreement, Ben, is more difficult. By nature, it is more difficult because the big question before the parties is what will be the consideration.
Mm-hmm.
The consideration for the prenuptial is, in fact, the marriage. The fact that we agree to this, and based on this agreement, we now will get married.
Mm-hmm.
When you're already married, the question is, well, what brings the wife or the husband to the table? What is the consideration? And
mm-hmm.
this is a more difficult file. But if the parties are independently represented, if there is an era toward full disclosure of all assets, if everything is on the table, all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed, then there are enforceable postnuptial agreements. I mean, there's no question about that. But they are going to be looked at much more carefully.
Okay. All right. We'll take another break, and we'll be back in just a moment with our concluding remarks with Let's Talk Legal and Cecil Harvell from Harvell and Collins. Hey, welcome back here at Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station. Of course, Cecil Harvell with us on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, sponsoring that every Tuesday morning. And you know, we were mentioning just kind of briefly in the in a divorce, if somebody has forgotten to dust off their old will and change their beneficiary, mm-hmm. is that affected
right.
here?
Well, once someone, a divorce is, we have to talk about more specifically. I mean, once there is a separation agreement, Ben,
mm-hmm.
the separation agreement by nature addresses these issues. The boilerplate of a separation agreement is going to talk about the right to qualify as administrator slash executor, the elective share, the rights of each other's in the estate. All of that is language that is wrapped up in a legal separation agreement. Mm-hmm. Okay. In the state of North Carolina, folks usually get a legal separation agreement. And then, of course, after 1 year of separation, there is a divorce. If there is no separation agreement and just simply a divorce and there is no separation agreement, then now it becomes a little bit more tricky. And basically, the divorce severs by law the moment there is a divorce. This now, Ben, again, is without a separation agreement.
Right.
Severs any tenants by entirety property, mm-hmm. which is property between a husband and wife. After all, they're no longer married, and makes that property tenants in common, a 50-50 interest, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
The right to qualify as administrator, executor, the right to a year's allowance, those things would also be severed because, after all, the folks are no longer married.
They will not be the surviving spouse.
She or he is no longer the surviving spouse.
Right.
Okay? But the claims against the surviving spouse's estate will survive.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you know, what was marital, what was separate, because they didn't have a separation agreement.
Right.
And those claims are not going to just simply go away because a husband or a wife die without there having been a separation agreement, mm-hmm. but yet there was a divorce. That will be a claim that will still linger. Another way to put it would be that if the husband were to die, the wife would potentially, one way to understand it would be that the wife is a creditor.
Mm-hmm.
She has an interest in that estate because they had not finished their legal separation agreement.
Okay. All right. So a couple of those questions there. But again, go back to the trust area for the last minute. This is a planning tool to make sure that, that your wishes are accomplished, in the most part. As much as they can be by law.
Absolutely. The cleanest technique or tool, the cleanest method that we can apply in these files where the elective share is a lingering hurdle to overcome is, in fact, this elective share trust.
Mm-hmm.
It operates well, Ben, practically. Again, it doesn't come into play, let's keep in mind, until there's a death of one of the spouses. It might be likely that in these circumstances, statistically, the surviving spouse doesn't have but so much longer to live at that point.
Right.
She, too, is of advanced age.
Mm-hmm.
When this elective share trust is even, when it is born, if mm-hmm. you will, becomes into being. And of course, then those assets will pass to the prior children.
Find out more by calling on the folks at Harvell and Collins at 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, and online at harvellandcollins.com.